A few general comments. Tell you a little bit about today and last night. I didn't realize that I had, or our session had touched so many people's lives. Had a lot of rather in-depth conversation, questions, requests for information. I was surprised at the number of people who had had this kind of thing, cult activity, touch their lives or their family's lives or the lives of someone they knew. And it opened up all kinds of discussion. I'd like to I think most of the faces I see here were here last night at 7. Tell a little bit about what we did and then set some procedures for that which we would do tonight. I defined a cult based on reading from a great many sources as a non-Christian. We speak from a Christian perspective. If you're an Islam Hindu of Ekankar, student of Ekankar, perhaps you speak in terms of the Christians as being a cult. I don't know. The people who write about the cults speak as identifying them as non-Christian system. That's an important word, system of belief, with doctrines and teachings that govern, and that's an important word, govern the mind and the lifestyle of the people who follow it, its members. There are a few things that characterize cults very specifically. Cult members are thoroughly schooled. They know their stuff. And if you want to get into it and have at it with them in Bible quoting, you might have your hands full. I have had my hands full talking to people who are schooled in their particular cult. They also have closed ends. I mean, you can go so far with them and there's no getting beyond that one point. In fact, I've had to decide for myself that many times there was no way I could talk anymore to those people because there was no language by which we could communicate. So cult members are thoroughly schooled. They are very zealous, passionate, enthusiastic, all consumed by that which they believe. They will give up everything they have, all their money. They will rob from their parents. They will steal on the street to get money, to feed the temple, feed the system that they belong to. And right and wrong don't mean anything because what they have to do is that which they are assigned to do. Their evangelistic, intense, passionate, and all the words that mean those things. Another characteristic is that they utilize language that is very close to being Christian. Many of the things that the cults teach sound very good, and they can be very persuasive. I did not take time yet last night to talk about Mormonism or Christian Science or Baha'ism because they are so close in many ways to the Christian faith teaching that you have to spend a lot of time sorting out the subtle differences. But they, part of their selling process is to utilize this language in insidious ways or in the people who develop the codes of the cults use it, and it's very persuasive. You don't think you're losing anything. It's all right to be an advocate of transcendental meditation and Christianity. They've written articles about that. A big one appeared in Time magazine less than a year ago. Language. Another facet of their language is that they have their own language and their own words that are unique to their situation, to their cult, and it may make sense for Christians to learn some of that language so that you can converse with them. I don't know that we could live long enough to really do that thoroughly. I've spent a lot of time with it, and I feel like I'm just on the threshold of understanding their language and their words. Cults, as they are defined being non-Christian, all say in one way or another that Jesus Christ was not Lord. He's everything from a pimp and a fairy and a good person and a sweet incarnate juice in one of the Eastern religions. But he is not Lord. He can be the Son of God, but he's not divine. Resurrection was a hoax. There are, if you want to get at the heart of what separates the cults from the Christian tradition, get at what they believe about Jesus Christ. They cannot say that he is the Lord. Those are a few summary statements that give a little focus about some of the nature of cult things. We talked a little bit last night about occult, Satanism, Spiritism, wizardry, augury, tarot cards, and all of the things that go with that. I will not re-rehearse that tonight. I think about 8 of you asked me for information. I went through my files. I have a file folder on each cult. I have a lot of material. Much of it's in shorthand that makes sense only to me. I have a 9-page bibliography that I don't think would be helpful. It's broken down by cults. If anyone's really interested, I will let you look at this, and we can maybe make a copy of that part of it that would be helpful for you. Again, this is in my own shorthand for my use. But I found 3 books that I felt were most helpful in giving concise, summary viewpoints of the cults that are most evident in the United States today. The most recent scholarly, thorough work has been done by Walter Martin. He has several books out. 2 of them are here. Another one is called The Mindbenders. It's published a year ago by Jack Sparks. You can look at those after this session if someone wants to get the titles of them. And you're interested in pursuing them, that would give you what they believe, would tell you something about a Christian response to them. These are Christian writers who have found sensible biblical responses. You can't proof passage back at them. It just doesn't work. I've tried it. There has to be a holistic sense, a broader perspective of where you're coming from than this passage says this in answer to your passage, which says that. But there is Christian response in there. For the forum tonight, I really don't want to say much more on my own, but I want to give it to you. I think there are some things that can be very unproductive in this kind of discussion in a forum of this nature. One of those is that we don't just look at the bizarre and say, oh my, 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 my. Because many things are very bizarre. I don't want to say, well, this experience touched my family and we just rehearse more bizarre things. If an experience gives you a light to say or a way of formulating a Christian response to cults, I think that's appropriate. I think that perhaps a a way of approaching that which we discuss would be, what does this mean for the Christian church? Should we be concerned about this? If so, what kind of actions make a valid response? What kind of things can we do to be Christian in a cult, in a time when cults are rising? I shared with you some of the experiences in Ohio. I did not share with you that in the last 3 years, we've lost over 15,000 members in the Lutheran churches of Ohio each year, 117,000, 122,200. And the churches in Ohio, and I've been in 41 or 42 of them on preaching assignments, are white-haired churches. And many young people in Ohio are not in the churches. And they are going to face in the next 10 years what it means to be a church with a new generation not there, or an old generation that's going not to be there, going to die. Already some churches are combining three church families coming together, and most of those are older. What does this mean? I think Ohio is a unique hotbed, focal point in the country for cult activity. I mentioned at least seven home bases that were within 150 miles of Columbus. Very active. But from the comments that were shared with me last night and today, I understand cults are rampant throughout America. And some of you shared your experiences in California and in other places. I am not knowledgeable about California except what I read or some of the other places. But I think that they exist, and we may want to pay attention to what that says, and it may help shape that which we do. As we go back to wherever we came from and participate in the church families where we live. Cults are not limited to the rather sensational kinds of things that I gave you last night. Someone brought up the area of the electronic church. There are writers right now, Martin for one, who is studying closely the electronic church and making some connections between that and cult activity. I know of at least one Lutheran Curcio group whose leader became so charismatic and so caught up in his success as a leader of people and all of the things that could happen in their group because of what they could do, that they withdrew from the church, started their own little group. I said last night that one of the characteristics of the cults were that they were surrounded, that the people surrounded a guru, a leader, a charismatic, persuasive, strong personality often. I said they were nothing new, that many of them have their roots in religions that go back well before the time of Abraham. Some have their very evident similarities to the ancient Christian heresies like Arianism, Gnosticism, and they rebirth. Many of the cults believe in reincarnation. And that's enough. I've gone on long enough. What is an appropriate Christian response? What does it mean for us? Is it important?
Yeah, there's something that I really was glad to see this forum started tonight, because I was thinking quite heavily about it since yesterday. I was very pleased that my family from Emmanuel, I think they're here somewhere, that they were interested enough to say something last night. I sat down and talked to a Mormon elder here about a year ago. I thought that I was a Christian. I thought I knew my Lord. I thought I really knew where I was going. And I started kind of searching out. Now, this is one perspective that I think why so many kids get caught up in the cult sect as we know it today. When you really don't know where you're going, you don't really have your feet rooted in something solid. You can claim that you know the gospel. You can claim that that you're in the family of God. But when I finally realized by talking to this elder that I almost went Mormon, until a friend of mine at my job pulled me to the side and explained things to me, explained the Mormon, and I thought it over and went back to him a day later, and I took him by the hand and said, thanks. Because I realized that one thing I love about the Lutheran is that it is from the gospel. And I'm still growing. I really thank God I've come and I've learned a lot about my Lord, and I love everybody here. It's been a fantastic trip for me. And I've got a lot to share with my family back home. But what I wanted to say was this, is that I got a cousin that got caught up in the cult, and he is a profound Catholic. And just as an example, that I thank God, I don't know what brought him out of it, but it cost him a lot of money. It cost him almost his family. It did cost him his job. He didn't know where he was going. And somehow or another, anyway, the Lord took hold. Somehow he found him. And he is now going into the ministry field. Thank God he got his life turned around. He was really into it a long, long ways. But if you don't know where you're going, if you're not sure about your faith, it's very, very easy to be pulled out. Very, very easy. That's why I stress, I really thank that you brought this up, because this scares me. Because I thought I knew my Lord, and I was almost easily led astray, because the Mormons take what they want from the Bible, old or new, and they can, I tell you, they just roll off his tongue. And it really sounds good to me, just like Mary says. They make it sound really good. And I realized that if you're going to walk with Christ, it's not an easy road. You're going to go through hell, and I've just begun. I don't know what's ahead of me. I'm scared. There's things back home that I want to say, and I just pray God will direct me, because I don't know what I'm going to do or where I'm going to go. But I know that I don't want to see my Christian family pulled out. So.
I was going to say that I think one thing that maybe we can help with this is that people probably do need to learn to live with ambiguity and uncertainty a little better. Because I think that there is a great tendency to want a panacea or an answer. And I would think that a cult would be very appealing, and it would provide an answer for, and I think, so maybe we need to think about ways to help people deal with uncertainty, ambiguity, and that is a process that will continue for years to come, and nothing is going to be a panacea or an answer.
There is not a cult in existence that does not have an elaborate, sophisticated system into which you fit your days, your hours, your mind is all ordered. That's comforting.
Yeah, it is. Okay,
and that's one of the characteristics of cults. In a very uncertain time, that can have its appeal then. Anybody else?
I have a friend that joined the Unity Church, and he was his parents were divorced, and I think that's probably why one of the reasons why he got into it. He was in San Francisco, and they got him, and he went out and made and got money and brought it back. And the reason we found out is some of the guys from Lewis and Clark went to see him, and when they found out that some people were going to see him, they moved him, and then they moved him back to San Francisco, and then they moved him to Chicago, and a friend of mine just happened to be in Chicago and go and see him. But what they do is they have somebody with them all the time. They have light, like night and day, they have a light on, so that they give this, and Tony went to one of the sessions, and they said all this blah, blah, blah that really didn't mean anything, and it just kind of drilled him, and I guess he's going to get married to somebody he doesn't even know. But it's just,
that's one of the characteristics of the moon cult. Some young moon himself picks your marriage partner. You have no idea who that is until the day the marriage happens. But that's true.
Plus he has the mass weddings, mm-hmm, where they had how many couples it was, several thousand couples. Only they're not really married. They can't be officially married until they do it individually later on. But you have the mass wedding, and then later on they get married too.
Back there, John.
Yeah, Maynard, there's one area that I think we should look at and think about too, is the way the cults invade our institutions. I'm speaking specifically, in my case, of prisons. We have groups who come in under the guise of generally kind of a Pentecostal level. And I have one in specific in mind where we're involved by law, of course, with Christian Science, Mormon, Jehovah's Witness. We deal with that. We have to. But there are other groups who come in under the Pentecostal movement who bring in their own prophet, and then they work to relate. They'll bring the Bible in with that, and they start out preaching the gospel, so to speak. And when, like you said earlier, man, if you listen to that and it sounds pretty good until you commence to start picking up what they're really saying, and then they bring in a prophet of their own. And one of these, I won't the group, but their prophet is William Branham. I don't know if any of you ever run into that one or not. But, yeah, Bob, I'm sure you have. Who is supposed to be a 20th century prophet. And we have had to, we have taken the steps to bar them from the institution. They threatened to sue us, and now they're in a program of writing to a lot of inmates. And with a undercurrent of pressuring the chaplaincy into allowing them back in the institution. And they're involved, this particular group I'm speaking of, is involved in every institution in the state of Washington. They're trying to get into it. And I'm sure that's not the only one. I'm not saying that, and there's many of them. And that's another area that we need to think about, because they're reaching people who already are struggling in a negative environment, and they're laying that trip on them. And then they come out and they're right into it. It's another area that is really scary. You have to really be, it's a problem of separating that religious group that is approved by law and that which is really the cult, or it's preaching only one way, and that's where we get caught up in the law and in the state institution. It's really a tough one.
Back on the floor, I believe, is next, yeah. And then over here.
You mentioned before the cults having your time so well ordered. I think if we took our Christianity more seriously, we'd have our time more ordered also. We'd spend more time in prayer, in reading, and in service. And I think we'd have a few less problems ourselves. Now, I can't speak from an area of perfection, but only from what I know I should do, and I'm a little negligent, but a lot negligent. But I think that would solve a lot of our problems as far as worrying about cults if we were doing really what we ought to be doing in the areas of ministry and study and prayer. I think it would take care of most of our problems.
One of the strongest urgings that seminary students are getting these days is evangelism. Do not be content with that little building at 4th and Main where you may be sent, but to reach out and begin to be more aware of the world around you. And this is just parenthetical to what you were saying, a feeling that we're spending too much time looking in, and that's a characteristic of cults, that they exist for each other, unless they're recruiting, to reach out. Ellen, I think, was next.
I wondered, a couple of people have touched on elements that attract people to cults, and I guess it would be helpful to me to know if there are other areas where the church is not meeting a need, or what is the big attraction? Maybe you covered it the other night.
Some of it, but we've got a lot of young people here, and I would really hope that some of you would speak about what it is that you would like to see that would set you on fire about what we're about. Does the church meet your needs? If not, what? So I would like our young people to ponder that and maybe speak to that as we go along. And I'd like people from the group to respond to Ellen's question too.
Point that occurred to me and has occurred to me in the past on this topic, maybe it's already been said, but basically someone approaches you with a group, and I think maybe a very important concept to evaluate is, do you have the choice to leave? And I think in the Christian church you always do have that choice, that responsibility and that choice is yours. But in most of these cults, maybe in all of these cults, you really don't have the choice to get out.
But you never know that.
No.
Until you're in, until you're brainwashed, yeah. Until you're trapped. Without question, the cults love you into their group and their procedures and their whatever it goes on. And it's almost irresistible until you get trapped and then try and get out.
I also think they prey on the people of the weaker mind. I don't mean that degradingly. I mean, like, my cousin is the most lovable person you know. You know? And so I know my cousin well enough to know that he's so innocent. Just at that moment, at that time of his life, to stand there and listen to it, the man really knows his Bible, he knows where he stands with his Lord, and he would put up with him if he wanted, you know, if they tried things. But at that time, though, he was quite vulnerable. So I think we work on that, too.
The reason Garth said that he got into it from his letters is that they gave to the poor people. You know, but at the same time, when they gave to the poor people, they made them go out later on and beg for money. And I guess he was making a lot of money, so they, you know, kept him really somebody with him all the time. That's why. Because they gave to poor people, they helped poor people, they fed them.
Let me speak briefly to that. The moon system and two other systems are very strongly, they profess to give to the poor. If you look at their total dollar intake, it is so small that it doesn't make any sense. That's part of the get you in thing.
But it would be what attracts people. It would be what attracts them to it.
It's one of the things that attracts.
Even if it's not balanced.
Back there.
Yes, I'd just like to respond a little bit to what was said in the front row here. We had Colin Clay in our church in Penticton, who works on the university campus in Saskatoon and as a chaplain and has done quite a bit of studying into the cults. And one of the really scary things that he said is that the most vulnerable people are young Christian people. Because he says, number one, he says a cult will never look for a selfish person, nor will a selfish person ever be attracted to a cult. It is a person who does want to see something happen and who's concerned about other people. And they will also never seek an unintelligent person. They look for intelligent people who are wanting to give of themselves, wanting to see something happen in the world. And then, of course, if they can find a bit of disillusionment in their own faith and where they're seeing that their own church is not quite doing what they'd like to see it be doing and so forth, they are the ones that are really vulnerable to this cult system because they promise the impossible and say, oh yes, it's going to happen. And so it's not a weak-minded person, it's a person who is not selfish and who really wants to do something about the world situation.
Actually, the more idealistic you are, the more vulnerable you are to their approach. For instance, they can see you sitting in a bench in a park reading something about peace, and they come up to you and say, hey, you're interested in peace, are you? And you say, of course. Well, so am I. Let's talk about it. And after a while, they said, you know something? Tonight, the group that I belong to, we're really going to discuss this, and we got this speaker, and he's really terrific, and he knows all about peace, and we're working. Would you like to come along? I said, oh, sure, you know, what will that hurt? Well, that's the first step, and you're part of the group. And before you get home from the peace meeting, it may be a couple of months, if ever.
Anyone else?
Yeah, I've got a comment. Last night I was talking with Maynard after his presentation. The question I asked him was, what is the basis behind the cult? Is it the guy on top, the guru, whatever? Is it a selfish thing, or is it, you know, what is it in general that they're after? And Maynard told me that it's a truly deep down do believe what they're propagating. And I thought a little bit about this, and I guess I would put the question out, are we morally or ethically justified in trying to eliminate or prevent from doing what they morally think is right, what they truly think that they are doing right, which these cults, White Maynard's answers, seem to be doing.
I'm not very familiar with the subject, and so I'd like to ask a question based upon some information that I have come by, and that is that apparently what we think of as brainwashing may be involved, much as some of the military prisoners of war were subjected to. Would you be able to comment on that?
Mind control techniques are a part of many cults. Most cults, I would say, involves things like repetitive sayings that you do, saying of mantras, assigning you a word, and you repeat that over and over again, meditating, singing songs, not allowing you to be alone, deliberate control of everything that comes into your eyes and ears. In isolated places and rooms. Many of these places are headquartered in farms and rural areas where they have set up procedures by which they can indoctrinate. Yes, brainwashing is very much a part of what they do.
So
kidnapping is a part of what they do.
So in many cases, and it would not be people leaving the church of their own free will, but rather on a basis of being forced into it?
I think they're loved into it. I think very often they're persuaded with all of the zeal and warmth and everything that seems good and right, and then it changes. Then you get into it.
So the Christian church isn't really losing people by their own free will or by their own free choice in many instances. Would that be fair to say?
What do some of you think about that? Nancy, do you have a hand?
Well, it isn't directly to what you just asked, but I was thinking how, along with the more movement to the extreme right in Christianity now, I think people are looking to feel things, you know. People don't want to just know, they want to feel it. And I think that the Lutheran faith is not a real emotional faith in comparison to some. And I think a lot of people really want that emotional assurance. And partly, I think, because of our society and the extent of the loneliness among people today, that people really want to feel.
In partial answer to your question, there are churches in the East losing, Christian churches, Protestant churches, Catholic churches, losing their young people to the high-powered cult activities which are centered in those places. They are nominal members on the Christian church rolls, and they're zealous and participatory members in the cult, and they leave. So in that sense, we are losing them in some places.
I guess I wanted to respond to what Mike said and why we can morally try to extricate these people or justify the fact that we call them wrong. If you can try to look at that where they're headed and their goal and also how it affects an individual's life to be involved in the cult. You can see any damage and either hurt to themselves or their family. You know, I think we have a right to say that, to point those things out, that it's not humanitarian, that it's not good. Perhaps it's breaking up the family. Maybe it's such a financial commitment that you can't even care for your own.
Okay.
And I just take some things with
that. Okay. But then I see, like the movie we saw on Francis of Assisi, and what he did, and everybody called him nuts, and he's a saint.
Well, one thing too about a cult is that what they promise to deliver, they never do. They convince the members that they're doing this, but all the members are doing is really making financially rich the cult leadership, and usually just one or two people or something like this. They say they help, they say they do these things, but nothing like that ever happens. That which the cult members gather in, well, just like Moon, it just stays there. He doesn't do anything that he tells the cult members that they're doing with it. And that, of course, is the big problem.
But, I don't know anything about that. I'm very poorly versed in the cult, but just from the response I did get from Maynard last night, that these people on top do truly believe what they are doing is right. And it's not for financial gain or any other type of gain. It's basically out of the goodness of their heart.
Then why the outrageous charges?
I can't say.
One thing that I'd like to say now is that in my growth in Christ, as I sit now, there's one thing I learned that Nancy brought up, which I agree with 100%, the now movement, wanting to see something move. I was, you know, the old saying about not being hot or cold, being right on the fence, don't make up your mind whether I believe in Christ or not, that type of thing. For a long time, I think that's what I was searching for. You know, I prayed, hey, come on, Lord, now I'm going to see some action here. You know, I really believe in you. Shoot down some little dream on the top of my head, tell me what to say, and help me to be the person you want me to be. And I've learned from Holden and the wonderful people I've met here in the ministries and stuff that we have to also wait. It's hard. There's a saying my mom did mention to me, it was let go, let God. And you know, that's really hard. It's really, really hard to do it. And I don't really think I, or most people will even understand what that means until you reach that point of understanding. I don't know how else to say it. Christianity is a spiritual growth. It's a growth within your mind. It's something that that you have to grow into. It just isn't there overnight. I'm 29 years old and I'm still learning about the Lord. And I've got a heck of a long ways to go. And so I think that we have to wait for the Lord, and I think that's got something to do with the cult, that if an answer isn't there right away, we do go out, we do search for an answer, and it is easy to get wrapped up in it.
I think a lot of our congregations are turned in on themselves, their own problems, and aren't facing a lot of real issues of the community. And I can say that about the congregation that I'm in, that it really, in a lot of ways, does not want to face some of its own community issues. And I think if the congregations were more willing to go out and minister to their communities, in the country, and take stands on critical issues and be open-minded to everyone in that congregation and their thoughts and ideas, then the needs that a lot of these people in the congregations who might be susceptible to cults would be fulfilled in the congregation. Do any of you have any similar feelings about the congregations that you're in?
I feel sometimes that if going to church on Sunday and going through the same service, the same ritual, the emphasis is on doing the Lutheran theology. And sometimes the overall basis of Christianity, loving one another with action, is lost. And sometimes I wonder if that closed-mindedness is somehow just in the church. And I don't know what are going on in seminaries or what the young pastors are coming out with, but is it a real strong Lutheran ritual, or is it love in Jesus and that type of thing? I don't know.
Well, you know, in our church, what's nice is that I've known everybody ever since I was, you know, nothing. And
when the church does not provide community or a feeling of belonging and being close to it. You're saying you have that, but maybe it isn't there. You're sort of nodding too.
I was just having some thoughts about organized religion and the church, thinking of, I'm a PK, specifically from the congregation that I come from in a large university town, and thinking about the needs of young people and the young people as the future of the church. And, you know, I love church and I'm on the ends in the church, but for some of the people that come in, especially young people that have lots of needs, and church can be a real clicky place, and we can really just pay attention to ourselves and not see other people, and not be warm and greet other people. And that's sometimes where we run into trouble. But the easiest things that would take a real small amount of time and energy. I think that's a real problem in our congregation, opening up and having that initial warmth and sincerity about concern, where the cults, where that is certainly to their advantage, that's where they take the time.
Back here for
well, specifically on that point, is it a question of, you know, backpacking and field trips, or is it a question of a sincere human interest and an interaction type of thing, where, you know, adults and kids or adults and youth interact in a more one-to-one way than just supporting, you know, certain functions, or, you know, what do you think about that type of thing?
On all different levels, but starting out and reaching out to specific individuals, going up and greeting people and asking them their names or their interests, so all, you know, up to things like this and larger level, more organized groups. There are so many different avenues to utilize that I don't think that we do. In our congregation, me as an individual in the Lutheran Church in this country, the Lutheran Church in the world.
I've got church family here, and I'd really like to do something now. Maybe I'm putting you guys on the spot. Marcus, I want to hear something from you guys. I mean, really, I do.
Yeah, I guess my question is, what are some of the specific avenues, you know, that we as lay people in the church can use to both communicate, both directly and indirectly, with not just you, I suppose, with each other, but specifically, you know, what are the avenues that are most open, perhaps, to channels that are open, what do you want to call it? You know, what are the ways that are most open to reaching out? In other words, in a dialogue mode, I'm asking perhaps younger people, other people, you know, what makes things more attractive to you, to listen to?
This may not directly relate to your question, but it may or may not, maybe indirect, it's probably indirect, but it may not relate at all. One of the things that the churches, I think, the problem that I have seen young people having with the church as a structure is that it does not allow them to be free. This is expected of you if you're within the church. You're expected to dress this way. If you want to attend church, you're expected to act this way. It limits the independence of individuals, and you're trying to go through a very growing stage that you have to go out on limbs once in a while. You make a lot of mistakes. It doesn't allow you to do that without a great burden of guilt. Instead of being supportive, it's inhibited. I think it has to, I remember the church, the youth group was nice for a while until you get a bit more roguish, and most people do, a lot of young people do, and that's where they start turning away from the church because it's no longer supportive. It's instead inhibitive. That's repetitious, I just said that. But if the church can look at young people and their natural tendencies and offer purposes as their intellect grows, none of the world problems are dealt with, some of the community problems. It's just you've got to come in here and worship and sit there in your chair in your Sunday best, and that's what the church is.
I don't necessarily think all churches are that way.
No, not all churches are that way. Well, okay, I've not been any that do. I see the general trend here that in every church I've been to so far, I've been to a number of churches in fine church communities, there's a big gap in youth. It's a big gap. And later high school and early college.
Several hands. Let's take this one first.
Give me just be patient just a moment. I organize my thoughts here. We see in the cults, I don't understand cults, but from what I understand, what's been going on, a cult is a very manipulative organization. Their entire, all of the motion, all of the excitement, all that they're giving to these new young people is, or new people, whoever they might be, is a form of manipulation. This is what they're after. And as I listen to the youth talking now in terms of what the church should do, they are asking for manipulation in a great way. I mean, like special youth organizations, special this, special that. Those are manipulative. They're all possible, but they're manipulative. And they're speaking from a world in which they are with their parents, their friends, etc. And it's a very routine world that they're growing up in. One that goes by their day-to-day living and is not necessarily manipulative. And manipulative in some senses, but they have their peer group whom they are very much in tune with. And when they are in tune with that, the peer group, of course, will very often dominate what the leadership and what the emulation of that the parents and the congregation are trying to give. And being very, very perceptive and very honestly perceptive as youth are, sometimes their perception and their excitement can lead them to conclusions that they find later are erroneous. And we're all acquainted, especially the old gray-haired ones, we are acquainted with the youth leaving at 14 and coming back at 25. I mean, this is something that happens. But we're dealing with a key word, I think, here, and something we should be very cautious with, and that's manipulation. Any program that we as Christians put into our church, we have to be careful that we're not doing it to manipulate youth. I can't think of anything that would be more of a disservice or that would the youth would pick up more quickly and would disillusion them maybe for life than trying to manipulate them. They're far too intelligent for that. But they also at this age, because of the excitement of their system, their hormones going and all the rest, cults can come and manipulate them because they want to move. They see the world is in shambles. Let's put it back together. And I think we've all been through that through our time and we've all come out of it. But it's not to say at all that they should not be making every comment they are and should not be dealing with it in exactly the way they are. They should not change one iota of what they're doing. I don't believe that. They should make the same complaints that they honestly believe. They should state honestly what they perceive in the church. And they should come to all of us in the church and tell us about this, complain, and also tell us what we're doing right. This is one question that has not really come up. We've asked, Maynard has asked the question, but not directly. He says, he's in general, I said, you know, what is it in the church, and I'm sure he meant both sides, is bothering you young people. So this is something I think that would be probably more important than anything else is the cooperation of you very perceptive young people with we older people, because we are in the routine of life and living our life. And we don't live your life today. We don't think in those terms. Therefore, we have to have some kind of a dialogue that is two ways and a very patient dialogue. Particularly, you being patient to us, because we have a tendency to cut off too, you know, we're very imperfect people. But that would be the most helpful, and stay away from this thing, anything that is manipulative. Fun and games that are not honest and true and do not come from the everyday life would be a disservice for everyone. And this is what most of our congregations seem to be doing, is, well, are we losing our youth? We're going to have a new program. We're going to have a new youth leader. Well, yes, probably we do have to have those things, but is it to manipulate the youth back into the church, or how can we get more honesty in our examples that we give them, that in our everyday, dull and dreary everyday life, that we honestly love God, that we honestly and sincerely are asking Him to lead us, that we honestly and sincerely are very, very lost. We, too, if we're 54 or 29, are always looking for God. We're never going to cease that as our life goes on. There is no such thing as completion in sin. So, I'm sorry, I don't mean to go on too long, someone else to talk about. But the idea is, think manipulation. Keep that in your mind and know that word, because this is the key word that's happening in the cults, is manipulation. And if you can keep that in your mind, I think it would be very helpful in finding solutions, because you'll eliminate a broad spectrum of complaints and hit and miss types of solutions.
About a year or a half a year ago, we went through a big problem with the children. Well, we were unsatisfied with what was happening in our church. We wanted to get into more devotions and find out more about what was happening. And it just wasn't happening. And a lot of the children were going out and looking for other ways to satisfy themselves. And they were going to other churches and learning about, you know, the other churches. And we had a big thing about trying to get a youth director to come in and help us fulfill what we wanted to find out. And just a little while ago, we finally got one. And things are starting to happen around. And we're getting everything set up, and we're starting in with devotions and getting everybody back into learning again.
I think there's to a youth program, I think, you know, a lot of congregations I've seen, there's one thing that's missing, and that's an opportunity for service in the congregation. Some service activity that takes place that allows the youth to not only receive the gospel, but to give it also. I think also there's one big, as Lutherans, I think we have one big hammer against the cults that we're not using to the fullest, and that is teaching and really drilling it into people that the difference between the law of God and grace. I remember in our congregation there was quite a few youth pulled away by a cult which has since fallen apart. And I think the problem with most of those kids is they didn't understand that we have salvation by grace. And they were pulled away because this cult gave them some laws and rules and structure. And I think, especially as Lutherans, I think that we have a very good tool to use there. And I think that it should be taught more diligently.
It is 10 o'clock. I would really like to ask the young people, just give them a few moments to say what they would like, or bellyache about something, or tell what's missing, or what do you see as something that would be helpful?
Can I just say real quick that I don't believe the cults are only claiming young people.
No, they are not.
Okay, I just want people to not go in here and think that every young people is, it's only young people that are susceptible. I think it's very often college age children and our children.
Well, it cuts a wide swath through the whole of humanity.
Right.
The new poor is a brand new group of people who are finding refuge in the cult. Those who are 30, 40, 50, who are dispossessed by budget cuts and technology passing them by. No, it's not limited to young people, but that's where the majority of their members come from, is from 16, some of the teenage prostitution things, to the Moonies and some of the things that go up into the 20, 25 years. But are some of you young people willing to share your feelings with us and what you think and what you want, what you would like to see?
Hand up there.
One of the things that I think is really appealing about the Mormon Church is, in Everett anyway, is the fabulous youth program. I mean, I have a couple of really good friends that are Mormons, and they're constantly going to activities at their church, dinners, banquets, plays, musicals, and, you know, they really feel like they're a part of something great. There's this real feeling of unity, and I think that's important for people our age.
Okay. Thanks. Somebody else?
Our church doesn't have that nearly as much as, like Jane was saying, the Mormons do. We do things, you know, sometimes we plan out once every couple weeks or something, but nothing ever really big or anything with it. But that you really feel part of it or something. I don't know. I wish our church would do a lot more.
Well, we had a youth program or thing, and I liked it, but it was never my favorite because of the kids. And then I went to my friends once. It was just a church down the street. And they didn't do anything, you know, they didn't have any religion part of it or anything. They just made cookies, but everyone was so nice and everything. And it just, when people are like that, I don't know, in my church, they're just, I don't know, the kids are just not that way. And I liked that a lot better than the group that they had, and everything that they did made me feel a lot better. And it was a lot like my friend, she's a Mormon, and they all have to, when they're, I don't know how old, 16 or something, they have to go to another country. And for 2 years, they are like, you know, missionaries or whatever. And they just, she goes to activities all the time at her church and everything. It just sounds really neat, but they don't do those kind of things so much.
Mm-hmm. I guess it sounds like a sense of community is what's being sought. A boys club troop or a baseball, basketball teams formed from kids from the church, some sort of team spirit, community spirit is what's being sought. And yeah, it's really appealing. You've got all your friends that you've grown up with are on, do these things with you every day, and it's kind of built in the church setting. And so you're built up and you're reinforced. Your church is reinforced, your sense of community and family, and that's reassuring. And we touched on earlier that young people in these times that are very uncertain are looking for more stable, easy answers. And these community, this feeling of community that you get by always doing things with a group of people that you know well is very reassuring. And I think that has a lot to do with the success of those churches.
I think one gentleman up there said a little earlier about service. And I, speaking from having been a youth leader in a church where the youth group for about 4 or 5 years was extremely successful, and the reason was they had a purpose within the church. And as soon as the worship setting in that church changed and the youth was no longer responsible for providing leadership within that church, the youth group died. They no longer were important, they were no longer a part. They became that special group that had to have the activity created for them to have fun, to draw them into the church. Once they lost their purpose and their service in the church, they were no longer interested in maintaining their activity, part of the church.
Need to be needed, don't they?